Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Pocket Buds, a back pocket podcast where I talk to my best buds about video games and stuff. This week, we're talking about MMOs. Massively multiplayer online games, more commonly referred to as MMOs, these Goliaths of the gaming world are known for getting a whole lot of people in the same place to go absolutely buck wild and sometimes fall into degeneracy. There's MMO first-person shooters like Neocron, MMO real-time strategy games like Age of Empires Online, turn-based strategy MMOs that nobody has heard of, and quote-unquote metaverses like Second Life and IMVU. Yes, the sexy doll games count too. But arguably, the most popular subgenre of the MMO genre has to be the MMORPG, otherwise known as the massively multiplayer online role-playing game for long, or the MMORPG for short. The humble MMORPG has been around since the mid-90s with titles like Terra and Ultima Online, but it was the early noughties that we really saw a boom in MMOs being released. Phantasy Star Online, RuneScape, EVE Online, MapleStory, Star Wars Galaxies, Toontown Online, all of these games were released within 3 years of each other. Doesn't that blow your mind? But it wasn't until 2004 that the world was really truly shaken. Everything truly changed that year with the release of World of Warcraft. World of Warcraft, developed by Blizzard Entertainment, is basically the MMORPG of all MMORPGs. It was a critical and commercial success upon its release, is the most popular MMORPG of all time, is one of the highest grossing video game franchises of all time, and is still going to this day. I remember getting into WoW as a kid, being very overwhelmed by just how many installation CDs there were. CDs nuts. It's an undeniable fact that since World of Warcraft's release, most MMORPGs that have been made since have longed for not only that kind of long-term success, but also the kind of dedication that its fanbase had to the game. People have met their spouses in WoW, and even held funerals for long-time players in WoW. I once talked to a 40-something-year-old lady about her divorce in WoW, and I was 11. Hundreds of MMOs have been released since World of Warcraft came out, and many of them have since gone offline due to dwindling success and rising costs of keeping those servers online. But as the years have gone on, interest for World of Warcraft has kind of gone down, and interest for other MMOs has gone up. You've got Final Fantasy XIV Online by Square Enix, which I briefly got very into and often find myself returning to once a year. Sure, I don't really follow literally any part of Final Fantasy, but who doesn't want to be a funny little guy, a pretty cat girl, or a giant lady? And then there's the wonderful world of Elder Scrolls Online, aka ESO. This MMO actually started development around the same time as the much-loved Elder Scrolls entry Skyrim did, and was actually the game responsible for the creation of the ZeniMax Online studio. Now, the Elder Scrolls Online is an interesting case in the sense that it had a somewhat rocky release. When it came out in 2014 on PC, it was still very successful. I mean, it is an Elder Scrolls game at the end of the day, but the subscription model that it had was something that a lot of people weren't really into. Buying the game and then continuing to pay for the game wasn't really a thing that Elder Scrolls fans wanted to do, which is why things very much turned around for ESO with the 2015 announcement of them ending the need for a subscription, with ESO moving to a buy-to-play model. Since then, each new expansion for the MMO has made the game better and better, with the title over the years being nominated for various awards for both the base game and the expansions. So I thought, gee whiz, I sure do want to talk about MMORPGs. Who better to talk to than somebody who worked on the Elder Scrolls Online from the very beginning? Luckily, one guy in particular came down to Australia for PAX Australia, and that one guy is Rich Lambert. Rich is the creative director of the Elder Scrolls Online and has been for all of its existence. He's also a longtime lover of MMOs, with one MMORPG actually playing a pivotal role in how he met his wife. I got the chance to have a chat with him before he flew off to PAX, so take a seat or keep walking or driving or whatever you're doing right now and listen in to my chat with ESO creative director Rich Lambert.
How you going?
Good.
Yeah, you feeling good?
I am. It has been a whirlwind tour. I just got here from Japan.
Oh, you were at Tokyo Game Show.
I was at Tokyo Game Show before this, so
it
was awesome. It was my first time in Japan. I got to explore a little bit, got to eat some amazing food, and just see what Japan was all about and the community there. So it was
cool.
Did
you go to any of the animal cafes that they have?
No, but we did have a robot cat serve us dinner one night.
Oh, that's
which
incredible.
Was unbelievably cool, yes.
That's so cool. I heard about a thing called owl cafes the other day, and apparently it's like a cat cafe, but owls? Which
okay.
I would like.
That sounds cool.
It's a cool thing, but I also like, I mean, they're nocturnal beings. Like, so it's either a thing of like, would they be open at night, or would you just kind of be drinking a coffee around a bunch of sleeping birds and like, how exciting is that?
I mean, owls are pretty cool. So.
Owls are incredibly cool. That's a really good point. Well, let's talk shop. So take me back to 10-year-old Rich Lambert. You know, little Lambie, as they'd probably call you. At that point in your life, did you see yourself becoming a game developer or getting into the industry at all?
No, I had no idea that making games was a real thing. I always thought that it was a couple people kind of in their garage, and they just made a game and it was there. And I guess that's kind of what the industry was way
back
in the day.
Kind of how it
started, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I had no idea is what it is and you know, was as big as it was and whatnot. And my career path originally was, you know, I really wanted to be a teaching pro for golf. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a golfer. I wanted to do all that stuff. And I got a job testing games at EA as a summer job between semesters, and that was 27 years ago now, so.
Yeah, damn. And how'd you kind of find yourself in the position you're in now, I guess?
Really just kind of a lot of hard work, you know, kind of right place at the right time. Video games are kind of my life. They're my passion. I've always been a gamer. And just, you know, being a part of that process and playing games and eating and breathing them, you know, it just kind of worked my way through from testing to production to design to, you know, lead duties to director duties.
Totally. And you know, you mentioned that you spent quite a bit of time at EA as a tester. Yeah.
Yep.
Would you argue that kind of in the game dev world, going from where you were then to where you are now, it's kind of like going from the mailroom to the boardroom?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about that process of working your way up.
It was a great experience, number one. Like, it was hard. It was really hard, you know, because QA was, and actually still is kind of frowned upon, you know, in some circles, you know, which sucks because they're the lifeblood of everything, and they work so hard.
Yeah.
But I got to see a lot of different teams and a lot of different games and the various development practices that they used, and that kind of helped me form kind of how I go about building things now and how I like to have the teams build things and whatnot. So it was great, you know, lots of really good experience. And then just kind of working your way through, you know, as a producer, I focused a lot on, you know, schedules and, you know, watching burn down charts and, you know, maybe not necessarily the most glamorous type of things. But I learned a lot there too. And then when I moved into design, it was more the creative aspect of things, you know, how do you get players to do the thing you want to do without telling them do it this way, right? So it's just it's just been a crazy journey.
So you're currently at ZeniMax Online, correct?
Yes. Yep.
And you were at Bethesda before then. Mm-hmm. You'd worked on Oblivion, you're working on Fallout 3. With working at Bethesda, was that kind of like your first exposure to the Elder Scrolls?
No. All right. So I actually played Daggerfall way back in the day. I toyed a little bit with Arena, but Daggerfall was kind of my first entry into the world. And then Morrowind. I loved Morrowind. That was really the big thing for me. And I always told myself I wanted to work on like a Bethesda style of game. And it turned out I got to work on Oblivion. And so I got to learn a lot with the team. And then Fallout was great. And then in 2007, Todd introduced me to Matt Firor, who's the president and general manager of ZeniMax Online Studios. Mm. And he just told Matt, he's like, Matt, Rich has been bugging me to make an online game for years. And Matt is making an online version of Elder Scrolls. And we talked for like 3 hours and Todd told him to take me, please. And Matt did. So
you were there from the start.
Yep. From the very start. So I think I was number two.
Damn.
So yeah, it's pretty cool. So
that's 7 years in development. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, we launched in 2014.
How'd you see the game kind of like evolve from then to release? Because you were there from the very start.
Yeah. So it's game development is really hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an exact science. There's lots of challenges in terms of what sounds great on paper sometimes really sucks when you actually get in an engine. And so we had to do a lot of exploring on, you know, the type of game we were making, what we wanted it to be, what's the line between MMO and Elder Scrolls game. Mm. And just getting through all of that was really, really challenging. And when we launched in 2014, we kind of had this kind of weird hybrid of Elder Scrolls and MMO, and some people really loved it. A lot of folks didn't. And so we had to really kind of rethink what we wanted to be. And that's when Matt and I kind of sat down and we're like, okay, what is it? Is it an online game? Is it an Elder Scrolls game? And we chose Elder Scrolls first. And then from there, everything kind of fell into place. And that's where kind of when Tamriel came about, where we removed all of the barriers to really exploring and kind of going in any direction and playing any way you want to. And that was a huge thing for us. And it's now almost 10 years later.
What was kind of the deciding factor when it came to Elder Scrolls as the online game to go for?
I think, so there were a lot of conversations between Matt and Todd, you know, what's the right thing? How do we do this? What do we want to do? And what we really, I think, set on with Elder Scrolls is because of the way stories are told in the world, you know, there's this unreliable narrator where there's multiple perspectives, and really the world of Tamriel is just full of people and it's their individual stories. And that fits really well with this kind of online community.
7 years is a very long time. Mm-hmm. And games change, clearly.
Yes, but they do.
So do
a lot.
People.
Yep.
And how do you think you kind of evolved as a game dev over the 7 years of development?
I learned just a ton, obviously. I was very kind of set my ways on the types of games that I liked and wanted to like, and how stories were told. And Elder Scrolls Online kind of changed that. Mm. You know, it definitely moved me more towards the fully voiced, much more kind of that immersive storytelling where I'm not necessarily reading and clicking on dialogue boxes and dialogue trees. I'm listening to actors really bring these characters to life. That really was a kind of a turning point for me in stories.
Around the time it came out, or at least around the time it started development, it's kind of a huge moment for MMOs. Like, in your eyes, what did the MMO genre kind of look like while Elder Scrolls Online was being developed? Like, what kind of market was the studio jumping into?
I mean, obviously, WoW was the big king on the hill, right? They were just this runaway success, and everybody was trying to get in on that and, you know, kind of explore what that was. But it was also really risky and kind of unknown. You know, there were really a couple of games that were doing well, and everybody else was kind of struggling for kind of their share. So, you know, we were kind of going in knowing we have this amazing brand that everybody loves, obviously everybody knows, and we wanted to try to do it right.
When it comes to kind of your experience with MMOs and with single player experience as well, what would you say would be kind of like the big glaring differences between your work on the two?
It's other players.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the big one. And trying to tell stories to players when they know in the back of their minds they're not the special one. Like in a single player game, you're always the special one.
Oh, yeah.
You're always the hero. So how do we do that in a game where there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of other players all doing the same things you're doing? And we tried some things that worked, some that didn't. You know, I think the big lesson learned around launch was player separation. Telling stories and giving players interesting, really interesting choices that end up putting you in a different position or a different layer than another player. So you and I are doing this quest and you choose to save the village and I choose to raise the village, right? To completely raise it. Well, the only way that you can really do that in our game is there's different layers. And so I would go to one area and you would go to another and we would be in the same spot, but we couldn't see each other. We couldn't interact with each other. And that was a huge problem. That's one of those sounds amazing on paper, but then in reality, it just doesn't quite work well. So we had to solve a lot of those challenges post-launch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of post-launch, the game's been out for a decade. I would argue that
getting close to,
that is super post-launch because it's 10 years later.
Right.
So what's kind of changed for you over that time when it comes to ESO?
Everything. Yeah. I mean, not quite. I mean, you know, we learned a lot with player separation, obviously. So the types of stories we tell and how we tell them and the choices we give players tend to be more personal. You know, I kill an NPC or you don't. There's still an NPC there. They just might look different between the two of us. So like the world is changing and your personal journey through it changes, but we can always play together. That was really a big one. And then with ESO, we try to really turn it into this virtual world. So it's not just questing and killing. There's lots of other things. We've got, you know, a card game that you can play in Tales of Tribute, actually an update 40, which launches in late October, early November. We've added a new system called the Endless Archive, which is essentially our take on almost like a roguelike. And, you know, there's tons and tons of other things we've added over the years to really just kind of make it feel like you can go in and spend whatever amount of time you want in the world and do it in your own way.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I remember a huge thing post-launch was the shift to, correct me if I'm wrong, is it Tamriel Unlimited? Is that right?
It was one Tamriel is what we called it. Yeah.
One Tamriel. Yep. And do you think the kind of shift to that made a big difference in ESO's success?
Yeah, absolutely. That was really the kind of the big thing that made us go from kind of this weird hybrid from MMO and single player game to this is Elder Scrolls. You know, that one Tamriel update in 2016 was there's no level gates, so you can go anywhere. You can do the stories in any order. You can always play with your friends. It doesn't matter what levels you are or what alliances you are. And that really brought home that kind of exploration style that everybody that plays an Elder Scrolls game thrives on and craves.
How much research and development kind of goes into working out the next step for a live service game? Like, you know, after you've finished developing it and it's out, like what goes into working out what happens next? You know, you just announced that you're launching on console in Japan. Like what kind of brings you to that point?
A lot of research, a lot of, you know, we do a lot of BI work or business intelligence work where we look at what our players are playing on, how they play, where are the types of things they do. We look at, you know, the markets, kind of how do we expand our, you know, our reach into other territories and whatnot. And then we also spend a lot of time in the community and trying to listen to what the players are asking for and what they're saying, and also just playing the game a lot as well.
And live service games, especially ones, you know, as big as Elder Scrolls, from studios as big as ZeniMax and Bethesda, notoriously data mined, of course. And what's the sentiment for kind of you and the team when these kinds of data mines and content leaks go public?
It's always a gut punch. I really dislike data mining. I get people are excited, but it's, you know, it's like sneaking into your parents' room on before Christmas and figuring out what your presents are, right? Like, it's just, it sucks. It spoils the surprise. It ruins kind of the message that, you know, the developers have worked so hard to try to kind of present it in a way that makes sense and understanding. You know, if you just see a still image of a work in progress asset, a lot of times you don't have the context or understand that that's work in progress and it's not done yet. And you think, hey, that looks bad. You're right, it does, because it's not done yet, right? Mm. So it's tough, and it's something that is a constant challenge. And, you know, we're constantly trying to stop that and minimize that, but people are creative and they find creative ways.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's hard to think of, but like, what's kind of the answer when it comes to it? Because I guess people always want to know what they don't know, right? And like, do you think there's an argument for the developmental process being more open, so people gain an understanding of what a work in progress actually looks like?
Yeah, I mean, transparency is something that everybody strives towards, right? Like, you want to educate people as much as possible, but the reality is we have to build a game. There's only so many hours in a day, and we barely have enough time to actually build the thing we're working on. And so, that education process, that transparency process, is really hard. And it's funny, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier before we turned everything on, you know, if players got to see kind of the really early things, the really early work in progress things on a regular basis, they'd be like, wow, that sucks. I'm not playing that, right? Like, it's so different, and we work so far ahead, and you just kind of become accustomed to seeing things in block world, you know, or checkerboard assets or, you know, really terrible roughed in, you know, first pass animations, or not even first pass prototype animations. And, you know, spending that time to go through and walk players through all of that stuff, it takes away from actually being able to finish the stuff that you're working on.
And I remember, I think it was sometime last year, Naughty Dog kind of made this big announcement that they weren't going to announce things until closer to release date. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's potentially like something that could make things a bit easier when it comes to data mines and stuff? Like maybe people will back off if they don't know anything about it at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said there. I think that's you know, something that Todd Howard, you know, has definitely talked about in the past, and he much prefers the when it's kind of getting close and ready, kind of then you present in all its glory. I really like that. I loved kind of that almost shadow drop that the Hi-Fi Rush team did with Hi-Fi Rush. Like, that had been in development for a long time, and it was so cool to kind of drop that and just surprise everybody.
Yeah, and like, it was really, really impressive that they managed to keep it under wraps. Yeah. Now, I want to go a bit broader and talk about kind of MMOs as a whole. How do you feel about the state of MMOs currently, like in this day and age?
I wish there were more, for sure. I mean, making games is hard, and I've said that before. Making an online game is even harder. There's even more challenges and whatnot. So they're really risky. They're really, really expensive to build. And so I kind of see developers and publishers kind of step back a little bit from them. And I see more studios trying to find ways to kind of get their foot in to kind of the games as a service, but maybe not necessarily full on commit to MMO. Mm. So you're starting to see the definition of what MMO means kind of change.
From what I remember, being a kid playing online games in the noughties and the tens, there was a moment of just a complete overabundance of MMOs. Like, everywhere you looked, there was a new MMO coming out. And a lot of them just ended. There was a huge period of just heaps of MMOs closing down, almost it felt like all at once. Mm-hmm. And why do you think that was? That like we went from having this overabundance of MMOs to just a few big ones.
They're really expensive, yeah. Right? Like, you know, you don't just ship an MMO and then let it go. You have to maintain it. You have to upkeep. You've got servers to run. You've got bandwidth to pay for. So it's really, really, really expensive. And if the game doesn't hit, you know, publishers will tend to try to cut their losses unless they can kind of see, you know, a gain later on. And everybody was trying to do what the Blizzard team did with WoW, right? Like find this, you know, magic and hit this home run and completely knock it out of the park. And a lot of people found out that that's really, really hard to do.
Totally. And do you think the kind of, you know, that wave of so many MMOs coming in and then leaving the space, do you think the prevalence of the MMO model kind of moving to other styles of games has kind of like impacted the MMO space in any way?
You're starting to see more MMOs kind of, I'll say traditional, but I don't know that there's going to be traditional MMOs ever again, not like, you know, the old school EverQuests and WoWs and, you know, Final Fantasy 14s and Elder Scrolls Onlines. But you're starting to see more of those being announced as being in development, which is really exciting because the more games there are, the more people are going to come to the space. But again, they're trying to find their ways and seeing how they can mitigate some of that risk that is involved in making a game.
Do you kind of have like a favorite niche MMO from back in the day?
Yeah, I mean, EverQuest is probably the one that will always have kind of that soft spot in my heart. You know, I played The Realm way back in the day and obviously played Ultima Online and Daok and things like that. But EverQuest is the one that really, really sticks out. That's actually where I met my wife.
Oh.
So, that's yes, so nice. I'm one of those. I'm one of those nerds that plays a lot of video games, probably too many. But yeah,
how'd that happen?
We were just in the same guild and we were in kind of one of the top end raiding guilds at the time. And back in the EverQuest days, it was a lot of camping, it was a lot of farming and whatnot. So we spent an inordinate amount of time together. And next thing you know, we had feelings for each other and it just kind of went from there. And we've been married 22 years now. So
that rocks. Yeah. You hear so many stories like that as well. Well, I played a whole lot of MapleStory and Adventure Quest I was huge for as well. Toontown. I remember Disney had that whole period of having so many MMOs running at once, like mm-hmm. Toontown and Pirates of the Caribbean Online. And there were a few more as well. And then they just shuttered them all right at the exact same time. I remember being so bummed out.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll ever go back to something like EverQuest?
I actually occasionally do fire it up and play.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's
Has it changed much?
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff. But I always, one of my favorite moments kind of in EverQuest is running around in Sebelius, which is, you know, giant dungeon, you know, and, you know, having, you know, the track non-farming races and stuff like that and just kind of going through there and, you know, having him, you know, appear because somebody goobered and screwed up a pole, just his head kind of appear through the wall and kill everybody in the safe cubby. And like, I just love that. So I always kind of go back and whenever I play, I'll start, you know, a couple of new characters and two box all the way up into Seb. And once I get to Seb, then I've pretty much got my fill and ready to move on to something else again.
Oh, yeah. You are on a bit of a world tour at the moment. You've just come back from Tokyo Game Show.
Yep.
How was Tokyo Game Show for the ESO team?
It was awesome. So we announced that, you know, we're going to be fully localized in Japanese on the consoles in November. Mm. And so just hearing the reaction of the community there, you know, they were really, really excited to hear that was coming and just wandering around the show floor and seeing all the games and seeing just the sea of humanity there. Like I was expecting a lot of people, you know, kind of Gamescom level of people. Mm. And we were just shoulder to shoulder walking through the show floors, right? Like, it was really cool to see.
Rocks. Do you miss your wife? Can you link back up on EverQuest? Oh, yes.
I miss my wife.
Have you got the tools to?
Well, fortunately, I can just call her now on my phone and we can talk.
What?
And we can FaceTime now, which is amazing. So
technology's amazing.
Yeah,
isn't
it's really cool. But yeah, I miss the heck out of her.
Yeah. And PAX Australia as well.
Yes.
Excited. Have you been to PAX before?
Yeah, in 2019. So just before the COVID's hit.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that would have been crazy because My first time was last year.
Oh, okay, cool.
Right?
Yep.
And that was an awesome experience. Do you remember much about your time in 2019?
I do. So our team down here did something kind of crazy in the queuing hall. So they had this really cool idea. I think it was Doom Eternal launch. And so, you know, Doom Eternal is all about kind of hell and fighting minions and stuff like that. So they took over the queue hall. And they had a pyrotechnic show in there and literally real fire burning everywhere. Oh, like you could feel the heat, like just this amazing thing that they set up and did. And so that was kind of my first intro to the team who, you know, they're a bunch of crazy Aussies, but also like just how cool and how much they think kind of outside the box. And yeah, it was a great time. You know, I got to meet Robert Whitaker while I was here cause he's a huge Bethesda fan. So we got to hang out, you know, and do that and then meet the community. So yeah, it was a great trip.
You love Australia? Do you love Australians? Are we the best gamers?
I love the area. Yeah. Like it's fantastic. I wish I could spend more time exploring and whatnot. But yeah, this is right up my alley.
Yeah. And I mean, you're in Sydney right now, as we know, this is filmed and recorded in Sydney. PAX is in Melbourne. So just based on like your experiences currently, which would you say to you is the better city?
Well, my hotel is in Manly, right across. I literally take 5 steps across the road and I'm on the beach.
Yeah.
That's pretty magical.
Yeah.
It's pretty, pretty exciting.
No beaches in Melbourne. Oh, yeah. None of that good shit. So you'd say that Sydney is the better of the two cities?
I don't know that it's better. I think there's differences there, but it's pretty special being able to stay on the beach.
Yeah. So Sydney is the best of the two cities.
I see what you're doing
Thank
there.
Thank you. Last but certainly not least, what's in store for the future of ESO?
There's tons of stuff we're working on. So we've already been hard at work on next year's chapter and have been for a while. We've got content planned all the way out to fourth quarter next year. I'm working on stories for 2025 and 2026. Like there's a ton of stuff that we want to do. You know, as long as players want to keep playing ESO, we're going to keep updating it and keep improving it.
Totally. And the response for Necrom's been pretty good. Hey,
it's our highest rated chapter we've ever done.
Awesome.
It's pretty cool. The Arcanist is amazing. Who knew that people would love cosmic horror? Like, who knew?
Shock horror.
right. So yeah, it's really exciting time.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time
to chat. My pleasure.
And I hope you enjoy the better city of Sydney.
Thank you so much.
And a big thank you to you for listening. If you're liking what you're hearing, why not give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using? Better yet, why not give us a nice little review? Here's one from Lavidius Loser with the title, Big Crush on the Freaky Lady. Love Ruby, the weirdo, says unladylike things. Thank you for your kind words. I do say unladylike things. And hey, if you really like what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting Backpocket over on Patreon, where you can get access to our lovely Discord full of all sorts of buds. And if you support us at the silver or gold tier, you can get access to even more audio content like this. You can also find us on Twitch, where we've got our main live show every Thursday from 7 p.m. AEST, and on TikTok, where we're constantly posting very good stuff for you to cast your big, beautiful eyes on. And then there's the socials, all the Twitter and threads and whatnot, which you're also welcome to get around. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in. And as an Argonian NPC just trying to get on with her day without being knifed to death would say, bye!
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com.
Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.